Hey, this is Jack, and this is the Jackie Road Studios podcast episode number, doesn't really matter. Don't know why just now in the middle of nowhere I'm going to start reading out the episode number. It matters not what the episode is. What it matters is who the guest is. Lewis Spears is my guest today on the show. And like every interview episode, there is a brand new song written and recorded at the end of this chat, inspired by something in my interview with Lewis. Lewis, I met a few years ago as part of the radio duo Luke and Lewis. They came into the radio station to do a few demos when I was working with Hamish and Andy, and they ended up doing shows across two different networks, across the Triple M network and on Fox FM as part of the Today network across Australia. Now they do their show independently. You can search Luke and Lewis to find their podcast. But Lou, in his own right, has got 500,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel. And when it's not lockdown stage 4 in Melbourne, Lou is touring the country or touring the world as a stand-up comedian. This guy is seriously one of the hardest working guys I've met, not just in comedy, across the board. And I find Lewis's approach to his work very inspirational. And even my wife listened to this episode before it is launching today. She listened to the episode, not really knowing Lou, not really having seen his comedy before, but just even she got something out of it. You hear in this interview his focus and his dedication to his craft, and it's something I really admire. The episodes are all up. The interview episodes are all up on YouTube, including this one. I've been putting the interviews up on YouTube now, and I've been having to strip the intro song that the guest brings in from the YouTube clips because of copyright. And now I've got to the point where, big announcement, we are scrapping the intro song. We don't need it, guys. We don't need it. I should have made, you know what I'm just realizing, literally at 9 p.m. on Sunday night before I post this episode, I should have made some royalty-free music to introduce the guest. Maybe in weeks to come I will. But what I have done is make some new music. At the end of this episode is one of my favorite songs that I've made in my entirety of working out of Jackie Road Studios, inspired by something in this chat with Lewis. No intro song here, just me and Lewis Spears in Jackie Road Studios.
Well, Jackie Road is just a place where we can have some fun. Well, I'm having fun at Jackie Road, doing cool interviews and writing songs.
Lewis Spears joins me in Jackie Road Studios. They're actually the very first episode where I'm not getting the guest to bring in an intro song. Lou, how are you?
I'm good. I'm great. And I you know what? Personally, I'm stoked I didn't have to do anything, so thank you.
Actually, you know what it is? You'll be able to comment on this for sure because you got such a great knowledge of YouTube and you got a big following there. Now that I'm starting to put all the interviews on YouTube, it just doesn't make sense to have copyrighted music as the very first thing that I play. So I've been putting up the interviews without pulling out the music. So, you know, for example, I'm like, all right, Amy Shark, and that is Coolio, Gangster's Paradise, but you're just hearing nothing. So I'm scrapping. This is the first time I'm doing it. I'm just scrapping the intro song.
It's hard when you have a thing that's on multiple platforms. You have to follow the rules of all of them at once. And one rule on YouTube doesn't really make sense on the podcasting thing, but you just have to do it.
Well, podcasting, it feels like there probably are rules, but it just feels like there's no rules because nobody's really going around checking if you've got copyrighted content and stuff on there. But I imagine you've had run-ins with YouTube before where you've got kicked off for a various amount of things.
Oh, yeah. YouTube has gotten much, much more strict. Like I recently had to say goodbye to a very old friend of mine on my YouTube channel, which is the word cunt. You can't say it anymore, which is a real shame to me. They updated their
policy. So did they actually send out a notice saying like, hey, like you who frequent this word, right, take it out?
They literally sent out an updated community guidelines. They didn't send me a handwritten letter and say, attention, Lewis Spears, but they might as well have. they sent out a thing. They updated their policies and they they have like levels of swear words. So there's light stuff like hell and damn, stuff that you could probably hear on a children's show. Then there's stuff that like fucking
stuff that
shit
was only outlawed in like 1932 when damn was like a big deal.
Yeah. So like damn was bad, but racism was good. And now we've kind of flipped.
And so what was what else was on? I'm scared to ask actually. What else was
I won't
on the,
say them because I'm not allowed to say them. But they had the middle ones, which was like fucking shit, and that's also fine as long as it's further into the video. But then they had hate speech words, so they had like the N-word and then all these other horrible slurs, and then they put cunt in there, so they were like cunt, terrible slur, and other hateful terms. And it's like, that's not a hateful term, that's just how Australians speak.
I want
our
to
culture's
ask you about
hate speech, mate.
Let's not get into it now, but I wanted to ask you about the news media bargaining code as well, which is something that affects you and affects a lot of Australians in a similar spot. But let's leave it for a moment. I just want to know how you're how you going in lockdown and everything. Are you on your own or are you with your partner? What's your setup?
I lucked out, and Jazz and I, my girlfriend, we moved out I kind of saw this pandemic coming, in the sense that I was following it in China, and I saw it being serious, and I was like, oh, this is going to come to Australia. I thought it was going to be way worse in Australia because we're so close to China and all these Asian countries, and we have so much tourism. I thought it was going to be way worse, but I was off there. But I saw a lockdown coming, so I was, and my girlfriend and I were talking about moving out for a while. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to do like a lockdown by myself and then also my girlfriend who lived by herself. So we decided to move out before it happened. And I think we moved into the house about a week before it was like it was properly locked down. So we were lucky in that sense.
Well, then you and because people would know you for, as well from Luke and Lewis, the podcast that you do together with Luke Kidgell. He was like on the opposite spectrum. I still remember like months into everybody literally knowing about coronavirus, and it was like the biggest news story in the world. It was the most, it would have been the most trending word in the world, and he still didn't know what coronavirus was.
Yeah, there was a moment, and Luke's great like that where we know each other so well, so we can just get each other. And I just noticed that, like, he wasn't talking about it. He didn't really know too much about it. And so I just decided to gamble. And when we were recording on the show, I would just started to do word association. I was like, all right, what's the first thing that comes to mind when I say corona? And he goes, hmm. And this is, like, months into the pandemic. Yeah, like people have died. And he goes, hmm, beer. He had no idea. And then to get him even more, stitch him up even more, I actually posted that clip again many more months into the corona thing with no context, because he was complaining about how people thought that he had done that after he found out. So I put it up three months after he found out about it, make him look even dumber.
That's a great stitch up. That's probably the one I saw maybe that made him sound even dumber than what it was original.
Really, really not fair to Luke on my part.
But I am feeling sorry for people like our mutual friend Radio Mike, who are stranded on their own in times like this. And you know, like what do you do when you're on your own 24 hours a day?
Well, I had a conversation with a friend on the phone, and he recently got out of prison, and I said to him, I was like, man, he's not in Melbourne. He's like, oh, what's lockdown like? I'm like, oh man, it's terrible. I can't leave my house. It feels like prison. And then he went, does it? And I was like, okay, yeah, maybe not. but it is bad. It's if you don't have that perspective, I suppose. I do feel sorry for a lot of people who are isolated like that. It must be so hard. That was a big reason why we moved out, so that me and my girl didn't have to deal with that separately, you know?
Yeah. And do you, maybe this is just my perception of like, I jump in and out of your guys' podcast and your stuff on YouTube as well, but like, it feels like you don't chat about her that often in your content.
No.
Is that fair to say?
I don't. Yeah. Not very, very rarely.
Right, because I feel like for somebody who does like a daily radio show and you're just always like scraping the barrel for things to talk about, and especially in times like this where you're not seeing anybody else, I just have to rely on Bianca again and again and again. And like, I apologize to her. Like, I'm the thing you did about like the argument we had about the who's cleaning the fridge. I'm just going to dredge that up because I'm desperate for anything to talk about.
It's a hard one. Well, I really like having a nice little separation between my personal life and this, because especially with social media, I think makes it worse is when you both have social media, and if you do talk about your partner a lot of the time, I see it's more like a younger thing, like people my age and probably even younger. I see a lot of YouTubers, creators fall into the trap of people giving a fuck more about their relationship than their content. And I'm conscious of falling into that trap. I'm probably a bit too overconscious, to be honest. But I also just
I would say people not knowing my business. I thought, because I met your girlfriend at your comedy show and she's lovely. And I just often think like, I wonder if they're still together, because I just never hear Lou bring her up. But I think it's a testament to what you can provide, like where you can mine for content, that you don't have to go into that.
Yeah, yeah. But it is funny. I remember she talked about this, like, because I never used to, I never talked about her on stage with jokes. Mm-hmm. And I remember we talked about this a few years into our relationship. She was like, why don't you like... You joke about so many things, but you've never written a joke about you. And I remember saying to her, I was like, you're opening Pandora's box here.
I think that's what it is.
Because I'll tell you, if I tell a joke about you, it's not going to be about the lovely day we had where nothing happened. It's going to be something bad. I just know that it's going to be a bad thing that I then turn into a funny thing. And then sure enough, maybe... a year after that, we had like a terrible fight that was 100% my fault, and it was a dumb reason and a dumb thing that I did. And then I turned it into like a 10-minute bit, and then I was like, you're welcome.
This is what you wanted.
Yes, that's what you wanted. She wasn't impressed.
Yeah, right. I reckon as well, like once you start pulling on that thread of the sweater, like you could just keep unraveling it, unraveling it, unraveling it, because, you know, where's the once you've opened the door, where's the boundary for it?
Well, that's another thing. I social media is so like, it's so like as close to life as you can possibly get. Like, obviously it's all like fake bullshit, but you want it to represent life.
You want to seem authentic.
Yeah, you want to seem authentic. Yeah. But I like having a little separation between what's really going on and what I'm creating, because otherwise I just don't feel like I'm ever not working. Like, I feel like those family vloggers that film their kids growing up and taking their first steps and shit. It's like, are you parenting or are you on the clock? What's going on?
Yeah, true. And then what is a virtue? Like, what is a moment that we all share where there's not the red light of a camera blinking on and off to say that, well, lucky that we're capturing this?
Yeah, exactly.
And have you watched a big social media conversation going on in our house at the moment? Because we've just watched The Social Dilemma, the Netflix Doco, have you seen it?
No, but you told me about it. It sounds amazing. I think I want to watch it.
Yeah, so it will be no surprises to you what's in there, you know, how much we're addicted to our phones and how much screen time we spend on them. So my wife and I are trying to have a competition at the moment where we check our screen time at the start of every week, and then the loser has to do the chores that we hate in the house. Because it's your job to be on there. Do you have any kind of restrictions for yourself?
I struggle with that all the time. I remember at the start of quarantine, I was literally every single day consistently logging 6 or 7 hours on my fucking phone.
Yeah.
Like, that's like a full-time job of just scrolling. But it is so hard, because social media is the number one most important part of my career and business. So
especially when you can't tour.
Yeah, especially, you know, that's like literally 100% of my income right now is posting and making videos and podcasts and stuff like that. So it's so important for me. But the problem with, I've thought about this a lot, and I reckon if it wasn't my job, I don't think I would have social media. I may just have Instagram, but that's it. I think a lot of them are just toxic. Twitter especially is evil. Facebook sucks.
I kind of agree with you on people, all counts, actually.
Yeah, I Facebook sucks. Twitter makes you angry. And Instagram makes you feel ugly.
Yeah.
So I think that I probably wouldn't have it if this wasn't my job and I didn't love doing what I do. But the problem with for us is like it's so hard to tell when you're working and when you're not, when you're scrolling, because I need to know what's happening to make like timely content and videos and jokes about things that are happening right now. So I have to do a bit of mindless scrolling, but it's really hard for me to know when I've done enough to then start working, or am I just wasting my life? I think a lot of it, I'm just wasting my life, but it's so difficult to tell because, you know, these things are just machines that are like designed to light up our brains. So
definitely. And I think 7 hours is not, sadly, isn't even really what, like, teenagers in the generation under us is like, so Christian, who I work with on Gold, his daughters are 14 and 16, and they'll clock up 9 to 12 hours a day on screen time.
That's so bad. I think
it's crazy.
That you and I, you more so, I honestly think we're really blessed to live, like, a significant portion of our life before social media.
Definitely. I can't think of how hard it was to be a teenager anyway without all that bullshit and to do it now.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, it's so strange because my girlfriend has like a much younger brother who's like, you know, under 15 and like seeing him, he's never known anything different. And it's like social media and it's so interesting watching him. I think that we're going to get like one culture almost in a few hundred years. Every teenager is pretty much going to be like the same person in terms of what they know, what they care about. It's really interesting watching him just do and say memes that I've seen on Twitter from American teens. Whereas before it'd be so separate. It's really interesting. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's strange seeing how connected the entire world is literally from the moment you can read.
Yeah. And the other thing that pops up in this documentary is just how much teenagers today are just stop taking risks and stop doing things. Like no one goes on dates anymore because I guess everything is judged. Like every move you make is judged and talked about and everyone can see what you're doing.
Yeah, I think like I had a little bit of that in year 12, but then you leave school and then it kind of just stops. But growing up in that where everyone's messaging everyone and following everyone, and it's just because, you know, it's just comparing yourself, and especially when you're in a high school bubble where there's only a couple hundred people around you to compare yourself to and all of that, I don't know, it must be really difficult, and I'm glad that I, you know, got to make mistakes and get in fights and do dumb shit.
Yeah.
Because it's real, whereas this other stuff it's just not real. And I think it's given a lot of kids like real bad anxiety.
Yeah. Did you start your YouTube channel while you were still at school?
Yeah. So I started it in year 12. In 2012 is when I started. But then I started taking it seriously the back half of 2012, and that's when it started to kind of take off there. But I always knew that I wanted to be a stand-up comedian because for me, my priority is stand-up first, and then the YouTube and stuff is kind of just a vehicle to do comedy and to get eyes so that they can see what I'm really good at, which is telling jokes on stage.
Yeah, because I remember Mike, this is such an interesting way to think about it, Radio Mike talked about being in high school and knowing about you, and you were like the dangerous comedian that like he didn't want his parents to know that he was watching. How important do you think it is for you to be like, to have that dangerous image, with want of a better word?
Look, I don't like, I love it, but I don't try to, I don't try to be dangerous. I just genuinely make things that I think is super funny and stuff that I'm really passionate about. And that just happens to be the vibe that I give off. So it scares some people, but it attracts other people. And I like that. I've always kind of I whatever you feel about me, whether you like me or you don't, as long as it's a strong feeling, I'm all for it.
And I definitely think you do have your type of fan. I mean, I went to your show in St. Kilda when you were filming the special, and it kind of reminded me of like punk shows that I would go to as a teenager, where all the kids were sort of a little bit misfit, you know, all dressed in black. Do you identify with that kid? Is that the kind of kid you were?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was like, my crowd is hard to define. I've kind of come to think of it as like they're all like individuals who are who they are and they can't really help it. So like I have a lot of internet nerds. I got a lot of like emo kids. I got a lot of like lads who like Oz rap and crime. Just like, yeah, you're right. Like just misfit type people that might have a little subculture, but other than that, they don't really fit in the rest of the world. And that was so who I was, you know, I was just a person who like, For many years, I just desperately wanted to fit in. And then one day I was just like, well, hang on. I literally can't not be who I am. So if they don't like it, fuck them.
How does the Aussie hip hop stuff fit in there? Because I see like, I see you reposting like albums and singles. Like, I honestly, that's not really my scene. So I don't know many of the names in there. But how does that all fit in with you?
I'm obsessed with it. I always liked rap growing up, but I could never connect with it, you know, because a lot of it is just like the struggle of being poor in America and talking about how hard it is to succeed there, or a lot of it touches on being like black and how difficult that can be.
And then the flip side of that same coin was like finally making it, and then you've got champagne and Maseratis and you're popping like bottles in the club, and that's not me either, so I couldn't really connect with that.
Yeah, exactly. So like on all three of those levels, I'm like, I can appreciate it, but I can't like connect on it on a level that someone who's from that background definitely could. And then I found like Oz rap, and like they were yelling out suburbs that I had literally been to, or things that I had heard of, or stuff that I had done, and I just connected on a really strong level. And when I started getting into it in 2012, it was like widely ridiculed, and it was a joke, and it was funny, and if you liked it, you only liked it ironically, right? But now I'm seeing that it's becoming like properly mainstream. And there are artists that like have blown up in the last couple of years that are doing massive tracks with huge American recording artists, like Cursor, who's a good friend of mine. He recorded a track with Future, who would have to be maybe top 10 biggest rappers in the world at the time. So it's really coming into its own, and it's super diverse now, and it's cool to see. But when I was into it, it was like real grassroots, and if you liked it, you were weird. But if you found someone else who liked it, it was like a huge thing.
Yeah, right. And how does Frankston fit in with it all? You're in Frankston, aren't you?
Yeah. So
go ahead.
I've had family here, and I used to work at a recording studio in Seaford. So it was pretty much Frankston. So I was there all the time, and that's how I kind of plugged into the Oz rap scene even more and met like all these artists and became genuine friends with them, the people that I listened to.
So what were you doing at the recording studio?
I was just helping out with social media, and they social media, filming film clips. I shot a couple of clips for Cursor many years ago. I just mainly social media and trying to kind of teach these people how to do it, I suppose.
And does Frankston still, I mean, it was always the butt of every joke for a Melbourneian growing up. Like, what is it like now? Is it still like that? Does it cop a bad rap, or is it deserved?
So it's really interesting. So it's like, I'd say it's half deserved. Frankston is such an interesting area now where it's like in a transition period. So at the moment where I live, my whole street is lovely, and it could be like any, like it could be neighbors, like my street, where it's just young mums and dads. But then you go two streets over and it's houses that look like they are in like the Fallout video game, like they've been hit by a nuke. They're shacks and there's ratty people. So it's like, I'd say it's 50-50 where I am, where it's in 20 years, it'll be the nicest suburb ever. Because if you even drive through Frankston now, if you were to take out the people, you'd be like, how nice is this? The amenities are beautiful. There's a beach. There's no needles. No one's getting arrested.
They did that big update to the train station.
Yeah, like the Frankston, the place is fucking beautiful, but unfortunately, we the people have ruined it.
I used to go, like, the only time I really go through there is like on the way down to the beach. Like, if you're going down to the peninsula, and I used to actually like catch the train down there, then get on that bus and like slip down there that way. But now the states. So Frankston Station used to be the scariest place in my mind. Like,
oh, it still had all is. These,
it was the notorious. Station's
still fucked.
Yeah, right. Okay. Even though it looks all brand new,
it looks nice. The people are still terrifying. Me and my girl drove through there the other day, and there were literally three people getting arrested, and I'm fairly certain they were unrelated incidents.
Yeah, right. How's the streaming stuff going, man? I saw that you're on Twitch now as well, which I know, again, I know nothing about, you know, like TikTok, Twitch, or like the new generation of what online stuff is cool. But what do you do on there? Just play video games?
Well, it came out of me going insane for not being able to do stand up and having no live interaction, because I like making YouTube videos, but at the end of the day, like, a comment going, this was good, it's
unsatisfying.
So disconnected, it's unsatisfying. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I got, it's numbers on a screen. Where I was kind of getting desperate for some kind of live interaction, so I thought, oh well, maybe I'll try streaming. And so I tried it. I jumped on there, and I've just been playing some video games. I think I'll expand it into doing some other different types of things and just talking to people, but it's amazing. I love it. Like, saying a joke and then having a bunch of people go, oh, that's so funny. It's not the same, but it's so much better because it's as real time as it gets, really.
It's close to a room full of people laughing.
Yeah. And it's that risk of, oh, if I say this, is it going to be funny or will it just piss off everybody? Like that tightrope thing that I love to walk on stage. You're just not walking in videos because you know you can watch it back and go, ah, that one's a bit fucked, just cut it out. Whereas on Twitch, it's that risk that I really like with stand-up is there. Probably even more so, because if I do say something too terrible, I'll just get banned from the platform. No one can take my microphone away from me when I'm on stage, but Twitch, they could just take me down.
And is it live only, or does everything get kept and then turned into like a YouTube video where people go back and watch it whenever they want?
I think because I have such a large American audience that obviously, you know, that'll be 3 a.m. when I'm streaming, I think I'm taking the videos and I'm going to turn them into cut down like versions of just highlights.
Yeah.
But at the moment it's just live. And I think I might, it might, you know, when live shows, stage shows come back, it might be something that I could incorporate where I could do a live podcast in front of an audience and to the internet or something like that. It's I think there's a lot of potential with it, and I think that's where people are moving well, because it's so much more authentic.
It doesn't just have to be video games. Hey, the only interaction I've had with it is after listening to this podcast called Rabbit Hole about how people get radicalized to like left or right wing politics. Yeah. They talked about this guy, Destiny, who Twitch streams. And then I started watching some of his stuff on YouTube. And yeah, I think he started as a gamer, but then he just now does like these like long, like 3 hour long debates with different people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting in the sense that it's really anything that you can film and put on camera, it can be a stream as long as you have good enough internet. So there's people that debate politics. There's people that play music and review it live. There's like people that ride bikes or people that stream in real life just with their phone and a massive battery pack, just talking to people and fucking around in public. There's so much stuff.
While they're cycling, they're doing a live feed.
Yeah.
Right. And so why video games? Is that just the most simple one for people to get their head around and to join in straight away?
Yeah. So for me, that's the easiest thing to do. Because Otherwise, you know, I can't leave my house. So the only other thing I could do is just talk, which is just basically like an Instagram live stream. So, you know, why would you want to tune into it? But with video games, you can have those like crazy moments where you have a win or you fuck up in a funny way, or it's just basically like an extra layer to the stream that I can be funny on top of. But because you really, streaming's interesting in the sense that you have to stream pretty much minimum 4 hour session is like actually short on Twitch.
Really?
There are some people on that website that stream 8 hours a day.
Shit.
Every day.
Just playing video games.
Playing video games, talking to people, watching videos and reacting to them live. I don't know how they do it.
Do they have their lunch and like toilet breaks live?
Yeah, so they're eating lunch. Because, you know, with radio, you play a song and then you have some food or you eat beforehand or halfway through. Twitch streaming, there's no breaks. Your ads go for 60 seconds and you can't really play them more than once an hour or people crack it. So it's, you eat on stream.
Oh, right. So there is a little breaker in there, because that's what I always think about. You know, in commercial radio, especially with a music-based format, you're so gifted in like chunky ab breaks, lots of songs, so lots of time to do stuff. And I always think talk radio, where they just have to like keep getting callers on and like they don't play songs, that's hard. But geez, streaming is like, that is properly nonstop.
Yeah, it's super difficult to do for that long. I've been having fun with it, but I get to the like hour three and I'm like, oh, I'm fucking feeling it.
And were you a game big like video games guy already?
Yeah, I was like heavy into video games, especially growing up. It was the only thing that I did. I got lost in video games for like 2-3 years, and then I kind of came out of it and was like, oh, maybe I should try comedy. And then that's kind of
well, this is an interesting point. I have a feeling like I never really got deep into video games, but the ones I did, I got properly addicted to. Like Tony Hawk Skateboarding was one of them, and I fear.
And they put out the remake. Are you getting on it?
I saw that. I don't have a console anymore, but this kind of leads me to my next question about addictive personalities. Is like, I fear that there's a part of me who, if I go down that wormhole, I really get sucked into it and become properly addicted and spend all my free time playing video games. Do you feel that as well? Because I know you got like some no-go areas, like you don't drink at all and don't do any types of drugs. Like, I feel like I'm scared of an addictive personality. Is that why you don't do those things?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because I absolutely have an addictive personality. Like, I like hyper focus on things. I get obsessed with things, and it's the only thing that I will do for like a year, and then I'll just be like, okay, I'm bored, and then I'll do the same shit on a new thing. Comedy is the only thing that I've actually kept in my life ever since I first decided I wanted to do it at like 12. So that's the only real constant. But I've gotten hyper focused on video games, on reading comic books, on painting miniatures and figures. And I know for sure that none of those things would ever come close to the thrill of Coke. So if I go near that, it's over. You can paint toy soldiers for a year and come out the other end, you've wasted a bit of money. You go hard on the bags for a year, you're a different person. You're not coming out.
Yeah. No, that's right. Yeah, I feel like deep down there's a little bit of that in me as well. I'm just scared of what it might do. Like, gambling's another one. Like, when I was first turned 18 and you're allowed to gamble legally, I sort of got like addicted to the thrill of that, even though I didn't have much money. But
gambling's
now I don't
dangerous for young men.
Yeah.
I know so many boys who are like hooked on that.
Oh, all my mates from high school, and that's people in their 30s. Every one of them bets on the football, like multis and shit, every weekend. Like, I'm the only one that can't get involved in those discussions. Every one of them.
Yeah, it's crazy. Those
gambling apps is just ridiculous. Like,
oh yeah,
it's crazy. And,
you know, then you start adding in like people who are making millions on YouTube and they're doing the same shit, but the numbers are higher. I've seen some crazy shit. It's bad.
Oh, I didn't even know. Was that a theme on YouTube to be like a YouTube gambler?
No, you don't make videos about it. It's very secret, but I fucking promise you it's there.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
And so what's the not drinking one? Did you ever go through a period of drinking and then just decide you didn't like it, or you just don't even want to try it?
Nah. So alcohol and weed for me is, my thinking on it is I don't have an issue with people who do it. I never have, and I've never judged people who do. But for me, because I have such high goals for myself in the stand-up comedy world, my logic of it is, well, it's not going to – initially I wanted to wait until I was 18 and then I would do it. And then I kind of saw what it did to a lot of my friends that had drive, and instead they started going, oh, well, fuck this thing. I'd rather just party and do this. And my thinking has come, and my experience, and I've also seen the worst of it with a lot of people, like friends and stuff, how it does affect and take away potential from people. My thinking on it is it might not hurt me. That's true, but it's definitely not going to help. So yeah. I don't need it.
Yeah, it definitely won't hurt if you don't do it.
Exactly. And I also just don't feel like I'm missing out, you know? Yep. Like I obviously am missing out on that experience, but you know when you don't feel like you're missing out on something? Like I don't feel like I'm missing out on golf. Obviously, I'm missing out on something because I'm not doing it, but I don't feel like, oh, fuck, I wish I was doing that.
Yeah,
same thing with drinking.
Golf FOMO is not a big issue.
Yeah.
And then I would say that you have an amazing like self-discipline. Whenever I think of people who are like able to just keep churning off their own momentum and like own self-discipline, I think of guys like you. Do you think that ties into the same place?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's I mean, obviously, you know, because I don't drink, I don't know for sure. So I can only really theorize. But I think it is a big part of the reason why, because it's like this thing of there's like this philosophy of stoicism where it's like if you can have as little things in your life as possible, you will be more motivated to basically chase things because you, instead of buying this or drinking that, you instead can only really get your thrills from doing something that you're passionate about. And that's how I try to model my life of if I know for sure the most exciting thing that's possible for me to do is to get on stage, why would I chase anything else? Why would I do anything else? But when you start adding in all of these other things, whether it's, I don't know, fucking TV or social media, you know, that can kind of dilute your direction or your need for excitement or conquest or whatever, that's, I think, can hinder you in the long term. You probably won't notice it, but I think that I've noticed, I'm 26 now, me not drinking and me not doing drugs, the amount of money that I've saved and the amount of like time and the mindset that I have, I think long, long, long term has put me above a lot of the people that I started with who kind of got held down by those things.
Yep, totally. Even just like as simple as the equation for me, because I hardly drink now, like maybe once every couple of weeks and not binge drinking for like, I haven't been drunk, geez, since like with a proper hangover for a couple of years. But even just the equation of like being hungover and wiping out a day, and that's a day that you don't make stuff or the day that you don't put into your content or what the stuff that you like to do is a day wasted.
Well, yeah, exactly. People are like, oh, it's just one night, but it's really not. It's it's the whole night. It's many hours before the night, getting ready for it, this and that, and then it's the entire day afterwards.
Yeah,
totally. And that just adds up over time. And obviously, you know, it's not caring about that shit. Obviously, isn't for anyone, which is why I don't judge people who do that stuff. Another big reason I think for me was I've always paid attention to people that are more successful than me and tried to learn from them. And whenever I would meet people that are more successful to me, still to this day, that are like leagues ahead of me, whenever I tell them that I don't drink, I haven't had a single one of them go, oh, wrong choice. I've had a lot of them go, man, that's so good. Keep that up. And I think that's pretty telling as well, because, you know, if they're so much more successful than me, they got to know some shit that I don't.
Yeah, definitely. So do you think there's any chance that opening the door again to video games lets in a past addiction that's going to suck up all your time?
I I was worried about that, but I started playing video games again way before I started streaming, and it hasn't really affected me. I've definitely lost a couple of days in quarantine for sure, but I think that it's also good for me to check out and not be always working, because then you just naturally burn yourself out. And when
good point.
You work at home and you can't leave your home, it becomes pretty difficult to be like, okay, am I actually taking a break, or am I watching one episode of a thing and then going 6 hours deep into work again? So for me, I try to like have at least a full day where I fucking do nothing. Like that was yesterday for me, where I'm like, I'm not going to do a single thing. I'm just going to do like mindless shit. I think that's important.
Yeah. And so is it like riding a bike? Video games, do you pick it up and you're just as good as you were like 10 years no. ago? Or is it...
Dude, I've lost it. I used to be so fucking good. There was one game I used to play, Monday Night Combat. I could join the lobby and I could make the entire enemy team quit and call me a hacker. And I wasn't. I started playing it the other day. I suck. Mm. I've lost it.
I guess
I need to get back.
My equivalent of that is I used to be a fairly good skateboarder as a teenager, and my mum and dad are selling their house at the moment, the childhood home I grew up in, and I've got my skateboard back again and I want to take it out, but I don't know, there's something about being 32 and you're like, all your joints are stiffer, you don't fall as easy. I don't like the idea of getting hit in the shins, and with skateboarding, that's all you have, all you ever had was bruises up and down the shins. I'm scared to get back into it.
Yeah, it's a hard thing. That's why I feel so blessed that my thing is stand up. I feel so sorry for people whose thing is sport or physical things, because
there's a big timer on it.
There's theoretically, as long as my brain works, I will only get better and better and better. Like the best comedians in the world are like 50 plus, right? Like Bill Burr and stuff like that. They're 50 plus. So, but you never see like, man, the best AFL sports player, he started in 1920, he's still going. You never see that,
dude. I feel the exact same about, like, I mean, you'll probably have a different view on how long radio broadcasting got left, but I guess it's a transferable skill. But for broadcasting, and even somebody, you know, like an old wizard of the radio industry said to me recently, like, oh, 32, like, you're still so young, like, you'll be hitting your prime in for the next 5 or 10 years, which is crazy. Like, by 32, every AFL player is already retired.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, it's, I don't know, it's something about, it's just a different thing. Like, with physical stuff, you peak in your 20s, maybe 30, maybe. Mm.
I went to high school with a gymnast. She literally peaked at 15. Like that was her time to make the Olympics, and then after that she's like, well, that, you know, there's no gymnasts over 20.
And then you come out the other end and your body's fucked, and you're like, wow, I literally have no other like elite skills, and I can't do the thing that I'm best at anymore. So I guess I'll just rot.
So you are well placed. What do you think? What is the ultimate success for you? Who are the guys that you look at and you're like, that's where I want to be eventually?
So for me, I love Bill Burr. For me, I really want to do the stand-up circuit in America. Like, I really just want to do the clubs there. If I could sell out a theater in America, to me, that's making it. I want to do what Jim Jeffries did, but I want to use the internet to get there. So he blew up, but he had a more traditional route.
How did Jim Jeffries get so big over there? I honestly didn't know about Jim Jeffries before he was huge in America.
So he is an interesting one. He had a more traditional route purely just because of the time period that he started.
Yeah.
He actually went to England and he started in Australia, got really good, then kind of grew out of the country because it's pretty limiting. Then he went to England, started doing clubs, got even better. He signed a few deals with like a few TV companies. I forget the name. I'm probably going to butcher this a little bit. Then he did a few festivals and HBO noticed him and signed him for a special. So he, I believe he fucked over this other company, signed a deal with HBO. They put out his specials. The other company sued him, but it doesn't matter because he's on HBO, which was huge at the time. And then he started to blow up from there. And then he just like did the circuit, Tonight Show, all this kind of stuff. And then when he really, really became super, super famous was he had his Netflix special and then he did the gun control bit. And that one went crazy viral across the world. And that's what took him to like really successful comedian to like top of the fucking game.
Yeah, that was a game changer. I actually even remember seeing that and not having a reflection of like, I didn't even really know, because he used Australia as an example of like how we brought gun control in and it wasn't a civil war. And that actually made me think back on that moment in Australia. And like, I didn't really think about it as a time at the time as a kid, but yeah, we did go through a moment where we changed our laws on guns.
Mm.
And then, so
that, changed the world. Like, off stand up.
How did you get, you said you had quite a big audience in the US already anyway.
Yeah. So that is purely, like, I've talked with a lot of other YouTubers that are much bigger than me. That's purely just like math and how it works. Like, if you think about it, there's so many more people in America than there are in Australia. So if you keep putting stuff online and you're good at it, naturally America just becomes your biggest country. Because that, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of million people there. So if a tiny percentage of them likes you versus a big percentage of Australians like you, it's still much bigger in America. So my audience went from when I started being like 100% Australian to like 80% Australian. Then I started to really blow up. I had a few super, super viral clips going. And now it's like 50% Australian and then like 30% US. And then the rest is just like England and a bunch of other countries. But even though I'm growing really fast in Australia, by far, America's my fastest growing market. So I think that where I see myself is eventually moving there in a few years, as long as COVID doesn't kill all of them, and trying to take over there, and then doing what Jim Jefferies does, like he comes back once a year or once every 2 years and goes does the big I'm home tour, and everyone goes, man, that's sick. Look at him go.
Great one, man. Well, I almost ran out of time with you there for how long I said I'd keep you, but I wanted to quickly ask you about the news media bargaining card.
I'm not on any time limit, man, so we can talk about it.
Tell me. Well, this is what I know of it. So the ACCC, which is like a independent authority here in Australia, is investigating like Facebook and Google and essentially on behalf of, legitimately on behalf of, but for the bigger news corporations that operate in this country so that they get some kind of unfair advantage over independent creators.
Yes. So to preface this, every bit of news that you see, whether it's TV, entertainment, radio, even local newspaper, all of that, 80 to 90% of that is owned by two companies. One is Nine Entertainment, and the other one is Rupert Murdoch, who's a guy who was born here but has lived his whole life in America and also owns a bunch of other foreign news things. So obviously they're very, very important and they influence elections and all that kind of stuff. And
yep, definitely.
They're very important.
Well, so, I mean, especially even over the last 5 or 10 years, they've bought up so much that like there's hardly any media diversity in Australia anymore after those two have their fingers in all pies. And I think even where I broadcast on, like the company that owns the radio station that I broadcast on, Gold, is owned by a company whose largest shareholder is News Corp. So I didn't even realize, like,
yes,
I'm one of the puppets, man.
Yeah, this is your boss that I'm with that we're talking about. It's like it's a very long paper trail, but at the end of the day, you're on a leash and he's your boss. So basically the traditional media I've been very critical of. I think radio is actually the best of it, but it's more so TV that I've been real critical of, and the news as well.
I think it's fair to be critical of radio, how radio does online though. And then this is what this whole argument is about, the online space.
Yeah.
I think radio still has its place. But I think just like, just like TV media, they really haven't capitalized on how to do things.
They just
online.
Haven't innovated. So from someone who's really used social media really well, and who's someone who's kind of been in mainstream as a little bit, not as much as you, but a little bit, I just see people ignoring social media and that hurting them. They've ignored it for like 10 years ever since it was created. They've completely ignored it and pretended that it hasn't existed and have only tried to please an audience that they currently have while ignoring, you know, the entire new generation. And that means that their ratings are falling and falling and falling and falling. And instead of adapting and trying to work out how to create content that works on TV and social media, on radio and social media, writing articles that people want to read that are good, basically, because the problem is I, as a consumer, I could turn on Channel 9, but I could also jump on my computer and watch news from Bulgaria. Like, you're going from competing with each other, essentially, because there's two players, the one person, to competing with the entire world and people like me who just have a camera in their bedroom. So instead of adapting to the way the industry is changing and trying to work it out, or even hiring people who properly understand it, they've instead opted to try and regulate Google. And these news media companies are arguing that they're losing money because of Google, because obviously Google posts their news, Google posts, they post videos to YouTube. And what they're arguing is that Google is exploiting them. And this is all social media. This is Facebook as well. But I'm using Google as an example because that's what
I know.
And
they're saying essentially the ad revenue that they get from that isn't balanced with how much work they put in. Is that the argument?
Yes. So how it works on Google and YouTube, this is how it works for 100% of people. There are no exceptions. So from me to News Corp to the, you know, Logan Paul, it's all the same. You make a dollar, YouTube takes 50 cents, you get the rest. And that's how it works for everyone. So they want more, and they're arguing that the value that they bring to Google and Facebook and all that by having their news on there makes more money than they're receiving. So Rupert Murdoch.
So this would be a good thing if they included everybody. So say they were fighting on behalf of every creator, you included, to get more slice of that pie, like a 60-40 split or a 70-30 split. Would that be good? Or
I do not think so. So to put it in perspective, YouTube is barely turning a profit, even with taking half of your money. So let's say you change the deal and all of a sudden I'm getting more money than YouTube. Now, the new guy who wants to start, he can't start because my 50 cents pays for the opportunity of the new guy to blow up. Because for every YouTuber like me or like anyone else or people making millions, I'm not making millions, but for anyone making millions, there's got to be literally 100,000 to a million people who are costing YouTube money, uploading their content and making no cash.
Yeah.
So do you think
YouTube really making barely turning a profit, or is that just their clever way, like the same way that Apple doesn't turn a profit so they don't have to pay taxes?
No, so we do know this. So Google turns a profit, obviously, but YouTube itself, the website, barely turns a profit. They're getting there, but it's taken them many, many, many years, and a lot of that is through monetizing other things other than ads. So ads actually are very, very unreliable. So this law would maybe be good, but the problem I have with it is that it explicitly excludes independent people. So the way that the media is framing this is they're framing it as the little guy taking on the big conglomerate. But if you look at the ACCC draft code, it literally says that it only applies to news organizations that earn more than $150,000 a year and employ at least three journalists. So, you know, I'm out, you're out. If we don't have three employees that are also classed as journalists, even if we are making over $150,000 revenue, we don't count. So this is only going to benefit the two players that are not in it for a fair fight. They're just in it for more money for themselves. A really interesting thing is Google actually came out and they said how much money these corporations actually generate for Google as a whole. So this is only Google. This isn't Facebook or Twitter or anything, but you could assume that you could maybe triple this number and it would be fairly accurate. So Google reckons that all of these news companies have generated $10 million a year, which is crazy money. That's huge considering they have their other revenue streams, they have their TV channels, they have ads on their own website. So this is just basically free money for them because it doesn't cost them to upload anything. They're not creating content for online. So it's essentially just extra cash on top of what they're able to generate on themselves. So they generate $10 million a year. So let's say maybe it's $30 or even $50 million a year if you add in all of the other social media sites. Yep. Rupert Murdoch, keep in mind this is only 50% of the news companies. Rupert Murdoch wants $1 billion a year.
Yeah. So really add up.
They generate, fuck it, say it's $100 million a year. They want $2 billion a year. They are talking out of their ass. It's not fighting for anyone. And it's also going to actively hurt people like you and me on our independent things because they also want special secret information about how the algorithm works and the algorithm changes so that they can manipulate that information to make, if I make a video about one thing, you make a video about one thing, and they make a video about the same thing, their video will show up first. So we're not getting any views, any clicks on our articles or anything like that. So this thing is not about fighting fair. It's just this giant mega corporation that just wants to make more money for themselves. And the reason they care about it so much is because Rupert Murdoch owns so many international news places. If they pass it in Australia, they're going to start working on all of these other things and the news will become so powerful and be so able
this
to
this is an Australian
conquer.
Law that they're trying to bring in. Is there any other laws like it already, or is it unprecedented for
unprecedented.
Anywhere in the world?
It's never been done anywhere else. So this is it's pretty crazy, and it's a shame that it's being passed by politicians that don't understand the internet. And also, let's be honest, it really to me doesn't look like an independent thing. It looks like the politicians going, look, we'll sort this out for you, and if we get this passed, make sure you help us win the election. That's what it reads to me. That's a little bit conspiracy. Everything else I'll stand by, but that's my little conspiracy thing of I think this is just so it's just a favor to these news organizations.
Wouldn't be the first time, definitely. And
sorry to interrupt. Yeah. It also specifically excludes ABC News and any government-funded thing. So it's not fighting for independent people, not fighting for news. It's fighting for money in two companies' pockets, and that's all. Yeah, go.
And where is it? Where's it up to? Because, I mean, about a month ago is when it all started to come out. Where are they up to with it?
So I've made a few videos on it, and so have a bunch of other really big creators. There's a big petition going around that has about 100,000 signatures. If you just Google it, I encourage you to sign it after you've done your own research. So that's being submitted. So about 100,000 people are saying, no, don't, and the government is taking that into consideration. To be honest, I think it's going to pass. Google just put out a new statement. So their first statement was, this is fucked. We can't let this happen. Their second statement was, looks like it's happening, guys. Let's try and change it so that it's more fair. So I think that what could happen is basically what these companies want is instead of getting an amount of money that Google decides based on the amount of money they generate, you know, a fair deal, they want to be able to negotiate how much money they generate for what they post, regardless of how much income it actually does make. And that price will be agreed upon with a negotiation between Google and the news. And if they can't reach a deal, a supposedly independent person will come in and force a deal. I think that if the person that decides on the deal is truly independent and does a good job, which is, let's be honest, pretty unlikely, if that does happen, I think that these news organizations might be pretty surprised with what they get, where it'd be pretty hard to argue with Google's data of you posted this article, 100 people read it, so you get 3 cents because we made 6 cents. It's pretty hard to argue that that's worth more money.
So, but it's still gonna be an issue. Even if that does happen and the law is passed, there will still be this issue of like them getting the algorithm data and knowing yes. how to scan the game a little bit more.
That's the real issue. And that's what's really gonna affect like everyone who uses social media, because if they have that, that's all you're gonna see. Like the algorithm is something that it's essentially artificial intelligence and it's a robot. So if you have like a list of keywords and topics and things that you should put in your article and things that you should not put in your article. So for example, you know, I had to stop saying cunt in my videos because I noticed that when I said it, even though it got my videos demonetized, not only that, it also got my videos suppressed. So it got less views. So I made the decision to stop saying that word so that my views would come up, and it worked. If I had a list and I was also a soulless corporation that knew exactly the keywords, what to avoid and what to specifically say that will get my videos or articles in front of everyone's faces, guess what I'm doing? I'm following that shit like it's a coloring in book. All of a sudden, my articles or my videos are terrible, but it's the only thing you're seeing because I've exploited the robot system. And an independent creator or an independent journalist literally can't compete, and you won't even see their article or their video. And this goes for comedy, this, that, anything that these companies create. If they have this information, they can literally manipulate the system to make it so that that's the only thing you see, turning it into another TV that you turn on and they control what you see. That's why I'm mostly against it. I don't really care about money. It's what you see and the ability to manipulate the algorithm and the website that I have an issue with.
Yeah, it's pretty ominous, man. What is the link again that people can check, or that I can put at the end of this episode so that people can sign that petition if they're interested?
Yeah, there's a petition. I can't remember what it is. I'll find it and I'll give it to you. So it'll be in the description. But just Google it if you're on the podcast app. Just Google news media bargaining code petition. There's something there that has tens of thousands of signatures, and just do a little bit of reading into it and sign that, because I think it's very important.
Well done, Lou. All right, my GoPro's already gone dead, so the last Great. Couple of minutes will be just your pretty face. But thanks for coming on here, man. You're one of the true hard workers and funny guys, so I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you, bro. And yeah, it's really good to do this, and it's very, very cool to see that you're still going and moving on to bigger and better things. Because
still first... going makes it sound like I'm a has been.
I mean still progressing is what I mean.
Yeah, like, thanks, man.
It's amazing to see, like, when I heard that you got your own fucking radio show and you were still doing the Hamish Anything and you're still doing this. It's like it inspires me to see someone who's been doing it as long as you still innovating and still moving forward. It's very cool.
Thanks, man. I feel very privileged and very lucky to do so.
Aww.
All right, Lou. Take care.
Bye.
That is Lewis Spears in Jackie Road Studios. The longest interview that we've done so far on the podcast. I honestly started this pod thinking that the interviews would go for 20 to 30 minutes. Just enough to grab something from the interview and use that to make the song. And then it was going to be like less about the guest and more about the song making. But I don't know. The interviews have just gotten longer and longer over the last few weeks. And I just find Lou super interesting. So I didn't want to wrap him up. And all the news bargaining code stuff is really interesting. And I have put in the description of this episode a link to the petition where you can go and fill out your name if you think that independent creators in this country are getting a bad deal from this news media bargaining code. There's further reading you can do up there as well on that same link. Guys, it's late on a Sunday night. I've finally finished the song for this week. I gotta say, it was another case of I didn't start it till Saturday morning, but I've really loved making this song all week. It's inspired by this little bit of my chat with Lou.
You know, when you don't feel like you're missing out on something, like I don't feel like I'm missing out on golf. Obviously, I'm missing out on something because I'm not doing it, but I don't feel like, oh, fuck, I wish I was doing that. Yeah, same thing with drinking.
And why I loved that so much is I actually have an ongoing battle that I'm fighting against my friends at the moment. For several years, my friends have been avid golfers. I'm the only one in our group that doesn't give a shit about golf.
and I am outnumbered when I catch up with my friends because it's hard to turn a conversation when you're the only one who doesn't care about golf. So Lou's comment got me excited to write a song about how I feel trapped in my own friendship group at the moment because I don't like golf. It is only because it's 9 o'clock at night and I have to get this thing up. It is sadly, uninspiredly, is uninspiredly even a word? Uninspiredly named The Golf Song. Thank you, guys. It's Jackie Road Studios. I love doing this. Thank you for listening. Maybe 6 years ago, one of my friends said, let's all play golf, and I said no. They went off to play, seemingly every day. Since then, now they're all golfing friends, and I'm the only one who doesn't think that it's fun to spend every hangout speaking all about golf. I'm like Rudolph, ostracized from the other reindeer, while we drink our beer and have to hear all about how everybody's round turned out. Yeah, every pitch, every putt, every swing, every shot, every bit of bad luck. But guys, I don't give a fuck, I don't need to know. Yeah, it feels like I was there, but I never wanted to go. Hey, sometimes we sneak beers onto the course. Yeah, guys, you've told me that before. You've told me that before. You're meant to wear pants, but sometimes we wear shorts. Yeah, guys, you've told me that before. You've told me that before. Sometimes we hit off the women's tee. Guys, you've already told me. You've already told me. The carts are made for two people, but sometimes we take three. Guys, you fucking told me. The stories of golf keep going late in the night. Reenactments seem to happen in real time. Every pitch, every putt, every swing, every shot, every bit of bad luck. But I don't give a fucking fuck, I don't need to know. It feels like I was there, but I never wanted to go. Why don't we just play mini golf? It only takes half an hour, and there are fun tubes to hit the balls through and obstacles to get around them. But now the only obstacle before me is navigating round this boring story. Every playthrough, every putt, every sand trap, every shot, every bit of bad luck. Guys, I don't give a fuck, I don't wanna know. Yeah, it feels like I was there, but I never wanted to go. Feels like I was there.
Can't we talk about something else?
Feels like I was there.
I think I get the idea now.
Feels like I was there.
It was a good day at golf.
Feels like I was there.
Who fucking cares now?
Feels like I was there.
Good night, I'm going home.
But I never wanted to go.